This is like the advanced, you know, preview of a movie that no one else has seen. So it's great that we're here to do this. So let me say a moment of things about the Amidah in general. The Amidah is our standing silent prayer at its heart. It may be repeated, and it often is repeated, but at its heart, it's a standing silent prayer that is said three times a day, in the evening, in the morning, in the afternoon, every day. On Shabbat and on holidays, there's a fourth one, Musaf, that is added. And only on Yom Kippur, which is really not my main topic, is that there's a fifth one, which might jog people's notice as we get ready for welcoming our Muslim brothers for a Ramadan Iftar event at the end of this month. Their five times a day of prayer are based on our five times of Yom Kippur. It's a direct borrowing of these prayer times. And at its heart, each of the prayer services, some of them have a Shema, some of them don't, but the heart of each of those prayer services is a standing, silent Amidah. Mm-hmm. Why standing? To show that we're really in a place of focus. We're not napping. I'm a great meditator. I do it every night for 8 hours lying horizontally. This is not that kind of meditation of, you know, yeah, I'm really listening. This is, I'm here. Why is it silent? The Talmud makes this very clear. You must add your own prayers from the heart. So if you've read every word of the Amidah, but nowhere in there is your own focus, your kavanah, the rabbis say that's not really an Amidah. That's reciting a bunch of words. These words are here to be recited with kavanah and to add our own intentions and prayers of the heart. So obviously that needs to be silent because they, first of all, your prayers are different than your prayers are different from mine. But more importantly, they're very private. They're very personal. When the Amidah is repeated, and I realize that some of this is known to all of us, but there's a reason I'm kind of starting in this direction. When it's repeated aloud at Shachrit, at Musaf, at Mincha, at Ne'ilah, we add the Kedushin. But other than that, the bulk of what we say is the same when it's silent and when it's repeated aloud. It's repeated aloud for those who might not have been able to say it, is the original idea here. Every Amidah, if it's Shabbat, if it's weekday, if it's Sukkot, if it's your uncle's birthday, every Amidah has the same three opening blessings and the same three concluding blessings. To state them very quickly, in fact, you could even look at them. Like turn to 125. Which happens to be, look, be Musaf or Rosh Hashanah. We always begin by invoking our ancestors. The God that I address is the same God of Abraham and Sarah, etc., etc. The second blessing, which I'm now on page 126, and this is in every Amidah, every day of the year, including Rosh Hashanah, is God's presence and God's ability for renewal. That's kind of my translation of the concept, Mechayei HaMetim. You restore life to those that are dead, either physically dead, spiritually dead, theologically dead. God's presence is ever present. And that third opening blessing, which is a little bit hard to find right now, but it's the middle of 127, the third paragraph of 127. Every Amidah has a third introductory blessing. God, you are the source of holiness. When the Amidah is repeated aloud, that's where the Kedusha, the holiness, the sanctification is added in its entirety. But even in the silent Amidah, we open with, you're the God of my ancestors, you are the presence that gives life to those that are dead, and you are the source of holiness. Then there's the middle part, the sandwich, which changes if it's weekday, if it's Shabbat, if it's a holiday, if it's Rosh Hashanah, etc., etc. But the conclusion, and I didn't write down this page number, but I'll quickly find it, the conclusion is always the same. We end with three concepts beginning on page 137. Concept number one, may your presence return to our holy city and our people. May your presence return to Jerusalem. The Shekhinah, the maternal presence of God that we believe is in exile with us, may it be unexiled. That's the beginning of the conclusion. Then on page 138, the second of three conclusion prayers, saying it is good to praise you. It's an honor, it's a blessing, it's a machaya to be able to stand one-on-one with the universe, with the creator of the universe. And then finally, this is a line I use every week at Hebrew school, we always end our Amidah with a prayer for peace. Everything we've been asking for and being thankful for is ultimately meaningless if we're not living in a peaceful reality. So we always end the Amidah, as we do on 138 in this Musaf, with the prayer for peace. So those three openings and those three closings are all the time. Ancestors, God's presence, holiness, the middle blessings which change, And then the three conclusions: return your presence to Tzion, it is good to praise you, and again bless us with peace. On all of the high holidays, we add three paragraphs, and you can look at them, and this is in every Amidah of Rosh Hashanah, and every Amidah of Yom Kippur. We add three paragraphs, which are on the bottom of 126 through 127, and they all begin with what Hebrew word? Look at the bottom of 126, and the top two on 127. Uvechein. It's almost impossible to translate. I was trying to see how they dealt with it here. Uvechein. By the way, one of the things I love about this, notice that both sides of 126 are 126. I just think that's an incredibly important concept. If you're in English or transliteration or commentary or alternative, you're all on the same page, even if you're on different pages. So uvechein kind of means thus. Thus it is. So on every Amidah of the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, we add these three paragraphs, uvechein. And those three, there's a whole bunch of threes here, by the way. In fact, there'll be four threes for a grand total of 12. So we've had the three opening, the three closing. Now we have these three things in the middle here, uvechein. Thus it is. And they have three basic statements to them. You are the God of all creation. Not just those in the synagogue, not just those who speak Hebrew, all of creation, you are the master of. Secondly, invoking a specific blessing upon the people of Israel and asking for it to be restored. May the light of David be kindled speedily in our days. And then finally, the third uvechein, the third and thus it is asking for negative energy to disappear like smoke. Wickedness, evil, brokenness, discombobulation, all the different words that we could attempt to translate, use as translations for this idea of wickedness, may all of that stuff vanish. So we'll realize that you alone is what the universe is, God. Now, interestingly enough, those three uvechains are not added in the middle of the sandwich. Remember the three, then the three, then the middle? Mm-hmm. They're actually added before... This is complicated here. They're added before the third of the opening blessings.
Oh, yes.
So in other words, in the weekday, and I know I've just lost like 90% of you. I'm going to say it again and lose maybe only 70% of you. In the weekday Amidah, or Shabbat Amidah, we say, God, you're the God of our ancestors. Mm-hmm. God, your presence, you know, brings life to the dead, and you're holy. Right in the little pause before the words, and bless you, you are holy, is where these uvechein paragraphs are placed. It's as if you're taking that one little concept of holiness and really expanding it into what does it mean that you're holy? It means, God, you are the holiness of the whole universe. And you are the holiness that has blessed our people for thousands of years. And you are the holiness that we believe in will one day, with your help and with our human help, have the ultimate tikkun olam, the ultimate removal of negativeness and brokenness and disconnection. And all of that happens before the words, you are holy, which you can see on page 127, the end of the third paragraph. Except on the high holidays, we don't just say, you are holy, we say, HaMelech HaKadosh, the ruler who is holy. And I'll come back to that concept in just a moment. So all of that, which I've just explained, is the case for every Amidah in the high holidays, of the Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. What then makes Musaf so special? Musaf, as we will see on page 128, and this is true of Shabbat as well, is an added prayer because there was an added offering in the days of the temple. Every day in the temple, there was a morning offering, an afternoon offering, and in the evening, they basically burnt the leftovers, what became Ma'ariv, became the evening service.
Every
day? There were those two services and kind of a third, two and a half services that became our three daily prayer services. On Shabbat and holidays, there was an additional offering. Musaf is the additional offering. So people will sometimes say, like, you know, I already did the silent Amidah. Why do I need another one on Saturday morning? Because it's an additional offering of that day. It's what makes Shabbat different than a Friday or, you know, your aunt's birthday, which could fall on a Shabbat. Now, and you'll see that on page 128, the way that we mark that it's in place of an offering is we actually read what the offering is. This, by the way, is exactly what Rabbi Kelman was referring to. In the Harlow, this was all in Hebrew with one little line that said, like, and accept our offering. This is a much more theologically honest Siddur. It says what the offering was. On Shabbat, two yearling lambs, etc., etc. In the seventh month, on the first day of the month, a burnt offering. I'm not going to go into the whole details. If you want to make this recipe at home, it's here in front of you. But that's not the main thing that makes the Musaf of Rosh Hashanah the wonderful, bewildering, complex thing that it is. That is what comes truly in the middle of the sandwich. And that is three subsections of the service, each one almost as long as Shabbat Musaf in its entirety. So you understand why this is not a prayer to rush through. This is like a 20, 25 minutes of silent prayer just to read it, let alone to think about it with Kavanah. These three subsections are the heart of Rosh Hashanah. They declare, their names are Malchuyot, this is all in here, you don't have to write this down, Zichronot and Shofarot. Sovereignty, I'll use for, at the moment as a translation of Malchuyot, Zichronot, remembrances, and Shofarot, obviously the plural of Shofar. These three things are more than just three sections of Musaf. They are three aspects of Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah is not called Rosh Hashanah in the Torah. That name appears in the rabbinic literature. Rosh Hashanah actually has three different names in the Torah and in Tanakh. Yom HaDin, Judgment Day. Yom HaZikaron, Remembrance Day. Yom Terah, Sounding of the Shofar Day. So again, we have Judgment Day, Remembrance Day, Shofar Day. These three sections are a reference to those older, earlier, more formative names. And this is where I wanted to say a moment about the word king, which seems to send a lot of, like, you know, emotional shockwaves into the service. I love what Stuart just said. God has many names, thousands of names. King is one. I feel like he should have said, deal with it at the end. I'm adding that. You know, and if you want to see this concept expanded, grab the, not right now, but the Kol HaNeshama Siddur, the reconstruction of Siddur, which is that maroon one. Ron, if you can point to
right
there. One over, exactly. There's also copies of it in the prose door, in the lobby area. Every time the word God appears there in Hebrew, they translate it differently. The Creator, the Sovereign, the Holy One, the Source of Blessings, the this, the that, because they're literally thousands of attributes of the universe, and thus thousands of attributes of the Creator of the universe. Being the ultimate ruler of the universe is one of those. Now, for many of us, the word king harkens to this idea, I suppose, of like God is an old, angry man in the sky. And I guess that's why we're uncomfortable with it. And we should be. I mean, I'm not suggesting theologically that God should be pictured as an old, angry king in the sky. But the word king is actually very powerful in this context. The king, let's say you're living, I mean, obviously none of us are living in a country that is a king, so just the very word sounds dated and archaic and King James-like, but imagine that you are living in a country that has a king. You can actually see the king. It's a possibility, no matter who you are, if you've bathed, you know, in the last month or not, if you are in the right place at the right time, when the king's, you know, horses come through on their royal visit, you can see the king. Everyone can be close. Which brings us back to this idea of I am for my lover is for me. There's a closeness that is possible with the, and if you don't like the word king, maybe substitute here, you know, representative in Congress. You know, they're, I'm not saying that you know those people are gods, but in other words, they are an entity that one can actually interact with. And assuming that it's a good king, it's a good ruler, a ruler who cares for their people. This is not like someone, an entity you can interact with, maybe only briefly, but you can get that chance. But this is someone who ideally, theoretically, is greatly concerned for the welfare of the kingdom. But most importantly on Rosh Hashanah, let's face it, the king or queen is the ultimate power. And that's really the message that is being portrayed here with the word king. So I'm sorry if it disturbs people, but there is a certain theological reality of Rosh Hashanah. In fact, it's the theological reality every day, but we tend not to think about it. You are not in charge of the universe. None of us are. And even more so, not only are you not in charge of it, you're not the center of it.
What?
I know, this is like a real, like, my mother lied to me. But Rosh Hashanah, more than anything else, is an acceptance that we're not in control of the universe. We are in control of one thing only: how we react to what the universe shows us. That we're fully in control of. We don't always feel that control, but that is in our control. How I react to life is something that we each get to choose. What life sends our way is not in our control. So there's a certain power in saying, if you don't like the word king, use queen, use some other word, you know, monarch, sovereign, big power. I mean, we can play around with what does it mean to be king. But what we're saying here, particularly in the section of Malchuyot, is God, you are the ultimate power of the universe, not me. I gladly, maybe not gladly, I surrender my ability to say I'm in control of everything, because I think about what's happened to me in the last year. The good things, the bad things, the confusing things, and I realize, wow, I'm not in control of this universe. You know, there's that great Yiddish saying, you know, people make plans, God laughs. You know, I thought I would do this, but I didn't know that, you know, that's not the way things worked out. So the section...
I just
please.
I get what you're saying is that God is ubiquitous in terms of available.
Available and beyond. Yes.
Right. So you see that at the same time.
Look, this is the immediate God, and this is the immediate and the transcendent God.
Right.
This is both, and they're both encapsulated with that word melech. That God is approachable, but God is also, you know, has much greater concerns than just me. Which doesn't mean that God doesn't care about me. God cares deep. God is unlike a person, that God can multitask and be concerned about, you know, an infinite number of things at the same time. But God is not only concerned with me. So there is this this you know, delightful Jewish duality or even contradiction. That God is immediate and close and listening to me right now, but also immediately and close and listening to you. And we could be saying completely different things. Like, I could be saying, I want to win the lottery, and you're probably not wishing for me to win. You're probably wishing for you to win. But let me. This will make more sense, I think, as we go through this. The reason that that's so significant is Rosh Hashanah, we believe, is the anniversary of creation, or more exactingly, according to the rabbis, the anniversary of the sixth day of creation, when people were created and were put in charge. It's like God is the property owner, but we're the landlords. You know, we're the property managers. You know, we are this higher power when it comes to animals and plants. But above us is an even higher power, and you can be the property manager and make whatever changes you want. But at least once a year, the property owner is going to come by and remind you you don't actually own this property. You're just taking care of it for the years that you have here. So what happens on Rosh Hashanah is an incredibly beautiful combination of liturgy that says this is a new start, a recreation of the universe, an anniversary of creation, and at the same time, a crowning or a recrowning of the monarch, a recrowning of the queen, the recrowning of the king. It is on this day that we make God our ruler or reconfirm that relationship. And this was written at a time, you know, over some of these words, by the way, go back thousands of years. The service as we know it is mentioned, this Musaf, is mentioned in the Talmud with specific lines that we still have intact. So we're talking about a service that has been recited for anywhere between 25 centuries or at the youngest, 14 centuries. That's huge. That's very powerful. And for the bulk of that time, the word king did not create the kind of, you know, reaction that it does for us today. In fact, this whole Rosh Hashanah is based on the idea of it's the crowning of the king. And how does one crown a king? First of all, there are horns, you know, da, 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 da. We just do it less melodically, you know. But the shofar is the trumpets of the crowning of the ruler. And what does the ruler have the power to do, since the king is an absolute power? They can pardon. They can say, you know, on behalf of my day of becoming king or the anniversary of becoming king, all of these people who've not been perfect, I pardon them. That's what we're asking God to do. So, Malchuyot Zichrono Shofarot, these three subsections, rulership, remembrance, and shofar, each have their own structure. Again, totally bewildering if you're not understanding the structure. Let me make it more clear. Look at 131. You'll see for the section of Malchuyot, It begins with a line, second paragraph, Takatu b'Toratecha. It is written in your Torah. And now we have three proof texts, which is a very rabbinic concept. Oh, you're giving me a halakha? That's great. You're giving me a Jewish law? Give me the proof text that explains that. You can't just say, I think, you know, the blessing of, I'm trying to think of a good example here. I think there should be one blessing before the Shema. Great. Give me a proof text that shows what that blessing is about. So here we have three Torah proof texts alluding to God is sovereign. Followed by, Uvdivrei kochecha katuv lemor. And it says in the holy writings, in the book of Ketuvim, in this case, Psalms, Tehillim. Three more quotes. So we have Torah quotes, Ketuvim quotes, all referring to Melech. And in fact, this beautiful new machzor has highlighted the word Melech in each of those quotes. You'll see, well, how is that a proof text? It says Yimloch. It says Melech. Or in English, it says sovereign, sovereignty. Then we have three more proof texts on 132 coming from prophets. Al Yedei Avdecha Nevi'im Katuv Lemor. It says in the prophets, quotes alluding to God's rulership. And again, this beautiful machzor even tells us which prophets, Isaiah, Ovadiah, Zechariah. And it ends with always one quote from Torah. So three from Torah, three from writings, three from prophets, one from Torah, 10 proof texts that prove God is the sovereign, and God remembers, and God hearkens to the shofar. So this isn't just words. I don't like, I have 5 minutes. How quickly can I run through all this before they sing the Nigun and we're doing something else? These aren't just words. These are incredible concepts. God, this is the day I don't just imagine you. I label you as ultimate ruler. And this is the day that you're remembering. You're remembering what I've done as I remember what I've done. And that includes all the good stuff that I've done. You know, we have to underline that point. Because we're so quick to say, oi, oi, oi. I mean, we're really good with the ois, aren't we? But what about all the, wow, look at all this great stuff I did. Yes, I missed the mark about 6,000 times, but I didn't miss the mark at least a couple thousand. So God is remembering. And as part of God's remembering, God is remembering our ancestors. And we're invoking them, particularly in Yom Kippur, which we believe is the anniversary of being forgiven from the golden calf. We're focusing, God, remember? Remember how you forgave them? You even forgave them. Clearly you can forgive me. I didn't hear your voice then 40 days later make an animal and bow down to it and say this is God. And you forgave those people? So, Malchuyot, God, you're the highest power. Zichronot, God, you are remembrance, and I remember, and you remember, and we're all remembering. And thirdly, shofarot. It almost can't be explained. I mean, there's something, I was going to bring it in, but the custom is not to blow it at night. There's something about the sound of a shofar which almost is beyond words. And I'll come to that concept in a moment as well. So each of these three sections have this format. Three verses of Torah, proof text, three proof texts from writings, three proof texts from prophets, one from Torah. They all conclude with a bracha. So for example, if you're looking at 132, that's the conclusion to God, you're the ultimate power. And the very bottom lines before the shofar notes, it says, look in the English here, Baruch atah Adonai, ruler of all the earth, who makes the people Israel end this day of remembrance. And likewise, at the end of the verses of, that was Yichonot. I was like, that's not the right one. The one for, thank you. The one for Malchuyot is. Thank you. So there's three. My point, and I'm confusing you by giving you the wrong piece here. Each of these 10 proof texts are concluded by a blessing, and in some synagogues, they're also concluded in the silent Amidah with shofar blasts. This, and our minhag, our custom, is not to do that. But there's a certain power. It's the only time of the year that your silent Amidah, you wait for everyone to catch up. And then at the end of Malchuyot, there's these silent shofar blasts. No one calls out the names. They just blow them. And then you continue, okay, Zichronot, page 133, 134, okay, 135, you say that last blessing, God, Zocher, Habrit, you remember the covenant, and again, those shofar blasts. And then shofarot, 135, 136, 137, a concluding blessing, Shomea Kol Tura, Amo Yisrael Barachamim, you listen with compassion to the sounds of the shofar, and in some synagogues, it says the shofar there is blown. Go back to this Malchuyot Zichronot Shofarot. For those who still didn't buy my package about God as King, let me offer an alternative approach here. In addition to referring to the three names of the holiday, Yom HaDin, Judgment Day, Yom HaZikaron, Remembrance Day, and Yom Teruah, Shofar Day, these three also refer to a very popular piyut, a poem from the Middle Ages, which I want you to take a quick look at. It's in Shachrit. Here it is on page 84. There's different melodies for it, but these are poems added through the Middle Ages, and this particular one has a refrain. You may know it. Adonai melech, Adonai malach, Adonai imloch, leolam va'ed. God reigns, present tense. Adonai has reigned, past tense. Adonai will reign forever and ever. So if the concepts of sovereignty, remembrance, and shofar don't work for you fully, an equally traditional way of accessing this is the first one is about what is right now. You're standing in the present tense. The second one is about what was, remembrance, all the way back to our ancestors. And the shofar, what has not yet happened. So that's not, you know, Shalom's little, you know, personal twister. That was implied with this liturgy, is that we have this notion of present, past, and future. It's all over the place. It's not, by the way, past, present, and future. You first need to be present in order to go back. And you need to be present in order to go forward. So it's not chronological, it's theological. You're first here right now, or we will be in a month. And then we look back, and then we look forward. Can I do this in 11 minutes? Sure, fasten your seatbelts. We're going to put it into a slightly high speed, but I think we're going to get to a good stopping place here. In Musaf, to look at page 130, you will see very familiar words. Though the melody is different when sung here. What are the familiar words on 130? Aleinu. Aleinu l'shabeach. Except here it's Aleinu l'shabeach. I can't hit this high note, but I'll try. L'adon ha'kol. I started trying to do it. Some say that melody goes all the way back to the days of the temple. Because Aleinu was originally recited only on Rosh Hashanah. Later was added to Yom Kippur, and way, way, way later was added to the conclusion of every service. But it's not that Aleinu's in this weird place. No, this is where Aleinu is supposed to be. It later was added on to every service. Aleinu, according to some, was written by Rav in the 3rd century, 17 centuries of saying this. According to others, it was written by Joshua. The Joshua upon going into the land of Israel. And actually that context makes more sense if one looks at the words, that one is saying God didn't make us like the peoples of the land as in this land. It's not so much saying, God, I'm different from my neighbor here, but I'm not like these Canaanites who evidently were cooking up baby animals in their own mother's milk and offering children to Moloch. So it's not saying I'm not like Christian or I'm not like Muslim. This is thousands of years ago. I'm not like those people who were in my land when I wasn't there and I've taken my land back. If it was written by Rav, it was written by Joshua, it appears to date at least from temple days. And when said in the days of the temple, one did a full bow. Today we only do that full bow on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. The rest of the time we do a half bow. So see the little bowing person here. I was thinking there actually should be a horizontal one.
Yeah.
Because so during the regular week we say V'anachnu Korim, we bend the knee. On Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, one does a full prostration. V'anachnu Korim, onto the floor with your knees. Umishtachavim umadim, head down on the floor.
Like our Muslim.
If you don't know what that looks like, look to our Muslim neighbors who borrowed this practice from us. And this is our chance to reclaim it. And I don't mean it as in they can't have it. Of course they're welcome to have it and back down. The Karaites do every Shaban holiday. But as it says here, maybe it's on this page, maybe it's another one, in some congregations as the leader or even others, I would like to personally recommend that everyone try this. It's an incredibly profound experience.
Go in the aisle.
Everybody goes in the aisle.
You know, it's like the days of the temple. It was wall-to-wall people, but when it came time to bow, there was enough room. They say that was one of the daily miracles of the temple. I have no doubt. The other one's one of my... There's 10 of them mentioned in the Mishnah. One is, a fly was never seen in the slaughterhouse. If you've spent any time in Israel, you know that has to be a miracle, that there was no flies at all.
This is
the introduction to Malchut. This is the introduction to Malchuyot.
So in other words, instead of the chairs, we should bring our own little prayer carpet.
You don't necessarily need. You could bring a mat if you so choose. There's some people who... there is a halachaba, not praying on a stone floor. This is not a stone floor. So if you want to bring a mat, bring it. You don't need a mat. My point is, if you've never tried this, but if I've accomplished only one thing in this shiur, it's to encourage you to try this. And if you're already doing it, encourage, go find someone else to encourage to try it. There is an incredible profoundness of beginning this section of God, you are the ultimate power, by kneeling and prostrating on the ground. There are two very, very strong feelings that come up from that, for me personally. One is total humility. Not only am I not in charge of the universe, I'm not even sitting. I'm on the ground in front of the universe. Secondly, and this is very important, particularly on Yom Kippur, we are inches above the ground when one does that. The ground that we will be buried in one day, may it not be for many, many, many years. And you have this realization, if someone was to take a picture of your living body at that moment, and if someone was to take a picture of a dead body who's just died, they look identical. There's no physical difference in the way a dead or living body looks, except for we're animated. We are alive. So to take that moment of saying, I am not only humbled before the universe, this thing I call life is my ultimate gift that you've given me, God. And it's a gift. It's a temporary loan. You know, we're leasing this body. There's a midrash that I love mentioning around this moment of the service that says when the temple was destroyed, angels brought little tiny pebbles of the temple to each place that a synagogue would one day be built. Isn't that an incredible image that before there was, you know, JV's liquor, there was a little pebble, you know, placed here? The Midrash is both to tell us that holiness is found in all places, not just in Jerusalem, but that this place is holy. If it's a true, it's a legend. It doesn't matter if it's, quote, true. We transform this place into our temple, into our Beit HaMikdash. So there's something about beginning this section of the prayer on Rosh Hashanah, and it's also in the Musaf for Yom Kippur, with this full body prostration. And on Yom Kippur, it's not only in Aleinu, it's done three other times during Musaf, when one recreates the service of the Kohen Gadol. So what I want to do with literally the 5 minutes I have left and the page and a half of notes is just to run through Musaf very quickly, explaining where things start and end, and then leave you with a couple other things to think about. So, 125 is the beginning of the silent Musaf. God, you're the God of our ancestors. 126, we conclude, you're the God of our ancestors, and say, God, your presence gives life to the dead. And then we have those three uvachains. All of creation, blessings for Israel, page 127, second paragraph, may all wickedness disappear. And then we conclude with that third everyday blessing, with that slight change, God, you're the source of holiness. Then we have on 127 and 128 the actual Musaf offering of Rosh Hashanah, and the one for Shabbat, if it's Shabbat as well. And that brings us to 130. We begin these three subsections, Malchuyot, Zichronon, and Shofrot, with Aleinu, with this full body prostration. And by the way, if you're doing it, take your time with it. Like, maybe the Chazan is already on the next line. You could stay down there for half a second if it's powerful to do so. When we get up to the words of Lifnei Melech Malchei Hamlachim HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I have bent the knee and bowed and declared declared this in front of the ruler of rulers, the Holy One, blessings to God. Page 131 begins the formal section of Malchuyot. Again, three texts from Torah, three from Psalms, three from prophets, one more from Torah, and a concluding blessing. Page 133 is an introduction to Zichronot. 134, the proof texts of God of Remembrance. Three from Torah, three from Psalms, three from prophets, and then one more from Torah, and a conclusion. The one more from Torah is on page 135 from Leviticus. And then we conclude it with that blessing, and that's the end of Zichrono. Then 135, the introduction to Shofarot. Three proof texts about Shofar from Torah. Three on page 136 from Ketuvim, from Psalms. Three from, including Psalm 150, by the way, is the third of these. Three from prophets, and it's so beautifully labeled, Aleph, Bet, Gimel. I mean, they're really trying to make this clear this time. They finally got it, that we can't just read 15 pages of Hebrew without some explanation. Shofarot concludes on 137, and immediately we start the three concluding blessings of the Amidah. Return your presence to Zion, page 138, it is good to praise to you, and a blessing of peace. And we conclude the Amidah 139. What I was hoping we would do right now, we don't have the time, but I encourage you to do it over the next month. Flip through those 30 proof texts, maybe with a friend, and take a couple minutes reading through them, so when you get to them on Rosh Hashanah, it's not the first time you're getting it, and it's not a beat-the-clock episode of how quick can I say all this, but actually the meaning of this is restored. When the Amidah is repeated, I had a whole section about Unatana Tokef. We'll talk about that another time. It's an incredibly intense, difficult piece of liturgy with a very intense and graphic story behind it.
Naomi's teaching it. Yeah.
So there'll be a whole time to talk about that. But I want to look at one last, second to last thing here. When the Amidah is repeated in Musaf, there's
the first part silent.
Yeah, everything I've just said is all the way silent. All those proof texts, all those, the bows, everything, that's all silent. So go look at the repetition. And I want to point out one last feature here. Not of this machzor. Let's go to the end of Malchuyot in the repetition, which is going to be like 167. Here it is, 158. So Musaf is being repeated. All of those proof texts are repeated out loud. That blessing is said. Then the shofar is blown. Why is the shofar blown? Page 158 explains it so beautifully. Because Hayom Harat Olam. Today the world is born. All of creation is called to judgment, like children or as servants. If we are like your children, God be compassionate, like a parent is automatically compassionate with their own children. If we're as servants, we look expectantly, waiting for you to be gracious to us. And then at the end of that, I believe my favorite lines of the entire year worth of praying, Areshet Sefartenu. And finally, a conservative machzor that translated it literally. May these words, I'm on 158, be pleasing to you. Exalted God who listens, who discerns, who considers, who attends to the sound of our shofar blast. So ultimately, it is about that silent Amidah. It's not about the words. It's that unexplainable sound. God, listen to that sound. That... because I can't put it into words. All I can offer up is that sound. And may that sound lift up our prayers. That's why we're blowing the shofar there. Everything we've just done, all those proof texts, and equally importantly, all those prayers of the heart are now being ascended up to you. Yes, in this liturgical approach, God is above, in the sense of a higher power. The shofar is bringing all of those prayers up. And that is what is repeated each time the shofar is blown in Musaf, Areshet Sefartenu. May these words and this sound be pleasing to you. So I wrote down here questions. We're totally out of time. I would encourage people to look particularly through Musaf, but any part of this machzor. So when you're here in a month, and obviously the next 3 days are designed to do this, we're familiar with this. We're taking this out for a test drive, you know, before the exam. I am so excited to get to daven with this machzor. Forget that it doesn't have purple pages that are hard to read. This is a machzor which, and by the way, my rabbi growing up was on that committee that wrote that machzor. And every Yom Kippur he'd say, I didn't do the purple pages, I had nothing to do with the purple pages. Rabbi Chaim Kival, Zichron Livracha, may his memory be for a blessing. We finally get to hold in our hands something we can truly be proud of, that I think speaks to us, that is beginning to unwrap the mysteries and the beauty in a way that we can approach it year after year. So all of these people in this room right now doing this bodes very well for this being an amazing High Holidays. And I invite us, those interested, to join for Mariv, and those who are able to be here for the next 3 days of learning. And Chodesh Tov. Please do email me or call me if you had questions I didn't get to. I don't want to leave you lost here. Education at NetivotShalom.org if you want to follow up with anything.